This is a Sandy Boy Productions podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I'm your host, Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today on the podcast, my guest is Jenny Simpson, who just ran the Boston Marathon. She ran 2:31 and was the fourth American, 18th person to finish the race. And this was just 10 weeks after a disappointing Olympic marathon trials where she made the decision to step out of the race at mile 18. Yes, we cover that at the end of the podcast. Jenny is a world-class 1500 meter runner. That is what she is most known for. She ran at CU, was sponsored by New Balance for 12 years. She's now sponsored by Puma. Some of her accomplishments include a gold medal at the World Championships, multiple silver medals, a win at a Diamond League, a 2016 bronze medal in the 1500 at the Olympics in Rio. And in this episode, we talk about what it was like to decide to run a marathon, to become a marathoner after grinding at the 1500 for so many years and being so good at that distance. Jenny has a lot of wisdom and advice to give us in this episode about what it looks like to try something new and different, and also what it looks like to walk through a so-called failure and get back up and try again. I always feel like I learned so much from Jenny, and she's just got this very honest, authentic, and genuine way that she has conversations, and it's such an honor to have her back on the show. Now, this is her third time on the podcast. She was on way back when, episode 188 in June of 2019, and then she was on again, episode 333, September 2021. So, wow, it's been 3 years. I am so excited to have her back on the podcast today. Hey, this episode is supported by 2B4 Performance Nutrition. Wow, this is the best natural pre-workout made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries. Easy on the stomach and delicious taste. It is my favorite thing to have before a workout, especially before a lift or a tempo run. It increases energy without having crashes or jitters. And what the blackcurrant berry does is it helps bring oxygenated blood to your muscles. I've been using this for almost a year now, and I'm so excited to have them back on the podcast sponsoring this episode. So go to 2before.com. That's the number 2before.com. Use the code Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, for 30% off 20 packs and multi-serve packs plus free shipping. 30% off. That's a good deal. 2before.com. Use the code Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, for 30% off 20 packs and multi-serve packs plus free shipping. All right, friends, please enjoy my conversation with the wonderful Jenny Simpson. What is dog's name? What is his name?
His name is Barkley, and he's okay. Our second. We adopted him a year ago now. That's so hard to believe, but yeah, we've had him a year now. And then Truman is over here. He's being a good boy. He's fast asleep. I have my camera or my laptop, his face. He's so cute. His little arms are like sitting up on the desk. You can't quite see it, but anyway, Truman is our
Truman, yes.
Rock star dog. Yeah. He can handle anything. Name. Yeah. Yes. So Truman's our first and our favorite. And then Barkley has been just the most adorable addition to our life. There you go. Hi, buddy.
I remember Truman. How old is Truman?
Truman is 4 now. Yeah, he turned 4 okay. in December. And we got him when he was like months old. Mm. I mean, he was 3 pounds, just a tiny, tiny little nugget. And then we got Barkley a year ago. And Barkley's a year older.
Really?
They're both... Yeah, and we call them the twins. They look nearly identical if you first meet them. They look a lot alike. But Truman's the lover, and Barkley's the fighter. And I love them both. They're so sweet, but They're a handful. And they love each other. It's really sweet. It's my coach, Mark Wetmore, he said something that I think is just so true about animals. He said, "Jenny, no matter how much you love Truman, you can never be another dog." And it's true. It's so true. Like, we love our pets, but it's so fun to watch them be just total brothers. So they're really sweet together, and they get in trouble together all the time. They go on adventures, and you can tell they totally have their own thing going. They have their world that is us, and then they have this like slice of their world that absolutely does not include us, which is really kind of sweet.
You're not invited.
We're really not. They got in trouble yesterday because they took off and went down into the field when I wasn't looking. And you can tell that they're just both instigating each other or egging each other on. And yeah, there's like, yeah, little slices of their day where they steal away and they have fun without us.
I love that. We, not to start off with a sad story, but it's been over a year, but our first baby, our dog, you know, she passed away. Not this past Christmas, the Christmas before, but same. Like, that was our first anything we had together, right?
Yeah.
And just this weekend, we were at this ice cream shop with two of our kids, and they had a dog adoption thing going on. And there was this pointer mix that was so cute named Puddles. And he had these, like, two black, like, eyes. I mean, the cutest thing. And I looked at my husband, and I was like, "What do you think?"
Yeah.
We just got chickens like 8 weeks ago. So he's like,
"Oh, that's exciting.
Calm down." Yeah. He's like, "Calm down though. One animal at a time. Like, you have eight chickens now. Let's do that for a little bit."
And you have to make sure that the next animal is not a predator of the existing animal.
Yeah. But then he was still thinking about it, because later that night I had gone to bed and he texted me at like 10:30 and he's like, "You know, Puddles was cute, but nobody will ever compare to Cadence." And I'm like, that's just, it just is what it is though. It'll always be that, right? Nothing will compare to your first
so many
animal.
Times with Truman, like, how in the world did we on our first try at a dog get the best dog in the world? And no dog will ever compare. I kind of understand that feeling of like, nothing will ever replace your first pet together. I know you said it's been a year, but so much of your like muscle memory in your daily life is centered around this little creature that needs you and so innocently and unconditionally loves you. So I haven't experienced losing a pet as an adult. I lost pets as a kid, but it's, I can't imagine how hard it is. And I'm like really dreading that day. It's so unfair that we know we'll outlive our pets.
By a lot. Yeah. It's a strange thing. I know, we were just saying, I have this little frog, in my front yard. That's like, it was my grandma's in her yard. And when she passed away, I inherited the little frog.
Oh,
and then we have this little like hummingbird plaque thing under a tree that is like, my father-in-law gave it to us when my mother-in-law passed away. So we have like my grandma, my mother-in-law, and I'm like, we need a Cadence like tribute out there. So we have this little like paw thing that her paw is in, and it it's like a clay thing. I think that's too fragile. We need to come up with something else that won't get broken by, I don't know, if one of my boys has a hammer out front and just randomly like chucks it across the yard.
Well, they are precious. For as long as we have them, they're honestly kind of the center of my world, especially now. I hold them, their little faces close, and I say to them all the time, "You're the thing I have to mother." What a sweet thing to have in our life, these two little boys.
Well, obviously lots to talk about. It's been a few years, I think, since you've been on the show. And now that I'm thinking about it and I'm looking at your background, like, how's your house and everything? Years ago when the fires were coming through, I remember I was like, Jenny Simpson's house.
Yeah. You know, it's been over 2 years now. There's finally homes that are rebuilt and neighbors that are moved back in, which is amazing. It took 2 years to have the first family really move in. And Yeah, I think people are really healing, which is good. But it was a really, really tough stretch of life for just our whole community. Our house is near where the fire started and then kind of spread out from this area. So we're unbelievably fortunate that our house didn't burn down. Our whole yard and everything was on fire when we left. I mean, literally like flames in our yard when we left, which was,
that is so terrifying.
Still thinking back to it is really surreal. And then in all four directions, the homes around us, we live on an acre. So we're in kind of a slightly more rural area. But all the homes immediately around us burned to the ground. So unbelievable loss in our community. And just watching people kind of return to their whole life and have it just totally gone. I learned a lot just watching people come back from losing so much. And I think the big takeaway for me is like, two people lost their lives in the fire, but with 1,000 residential homes burning down, we're so fortunate that there wasn't a greater loss of life in the fire. And it the biggest lesson for me was just to have to have what is enough in life is a lot less than you think. And our neighbors have really just been incredible examples of how you return to something that is so shocking and sad, and you wake up the next day and you get to work, and then you work the next day, and both is kind of coming back together. So that's been amazing to see, and hard. You know, there's been a lot of grieving along the way, so it's been hard. But so and then also the fact that when we came back to our house, we weren't able to live here for several months for a lot of reasons. But when we came back, we were kind of alone. I mean, when the houses around you burned down, you know, everything is ash. It was winter, so nothing's growing back right away. And the neighbors that we love and care about aren't here, and neither is their home, and neither is the surrounding kind of views that we're accustomed to. And everything around us was just charred and dark and burnt. So even once you're past the day of the fire or the month of, you know, the shock or whatever, we lived in a burnt fire area for 2 years. So it's this spring, I'm like so happy because I feel like, you know, the grass is back, the trees are green. A lot of people have planted trees. We planted 22 trees in our yard. And so there's life, and that feels really good.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, man, people are knocking down trees left and right in my neighborhood, and it is so sad. Like all these big, mature, beautiful trees, because they're building these like massive houses. And I'm like, oh, stop. Yeah. I want the trees. They're so pretty.
It's so funny, like as you have different experiences in your life and you get older, like things that you value.
Yeah.
And when I go to somebody's yard and they have these big, beautiful, you know, old shade trees, I'm so jealous. Our yard is just wiped clean, and it's going to take us years and years to have any shade again. So yeah, it's just funny what you don't know what is valuable until you lose it, or until you're older and your priorities kind of change.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I know I'm 40 because yeah, all the things. Exactly. I said to my husband the other night, I was like, do you hear that bird is so loud? And he's like, we are not doing the bird thing. Okay. We're not going to do the bird thing yet. Okay. That is
That's
the one
so
thing.
Funny. Yeah. We have a trail near our house that we run all the time, and there's groups of birders that come out and watch. So yeah, I'm every once in a while I joke around, I'm like, that's our future. If we don't keep running, like, we're gonna be out here doing that.
Gonna be birding. Okay, Jenny, well, marathoner, how do you feel?
Yeah, finally.
You feel good?
I do. You know, maybe slightly appropriate, you started with a fire. It just took a long time to get here. And there's so many angles I could look at this, or we could chat about the experience with the marathon. But when I was young, I'm lucky I got to experience a lot of things early in my career. I made the junior cross teams when I was in high school to go to the world championships. I made an Olympic team when I was still in college in a college uniform. Wow. I did a lot of things really quickly and young. And this was, you know, so after pandemic time, everyone's kind of considering, what's the next mountain I want to climb? What do I want to do? Do I want to pivot or shift or whatever? So I decide I want to take on the marathon. And it was a 3-year really long grind to make it to my first finish line. And that's just a new experience for me, like really having to like commit. I'm a very highly committed person for a long time to a mission or a task, but to get no reward and no like really positive feedback for such a long time. The fire was a big part of the delay. Injuries were a huge part of the delay. Making it across the Boston finish line was like, oh, I've worked hard for a lot of things in my life and in my career. This was one I worked really hard for.
I was thinking about this when I was cheering you on and watching your progress during the marathon. Like, to go from being world class, top of the world in the 15 to the marathon, how does that mind shift change happen? I mean, this is like a totally different kind of concentration.
Yeah. I've done a lot of long runs in my life. So the idea of like having to focus and race hard for a long time, that wasn't hard. What was harder was not running as hard as I can for as long as I can, like really downshifting and having this idea of you're not running as you can at any point. You're just running.
You can't
kind of. Yeah, you can't. I mean, I tried it and you can't, you don't make it to the finish. That's what happens. That's part of what I had to learn. And I don't know that I was ever going to learn it by somebody telling me the way to do it. I think I was going to have to just kind of learn. I've started saying this a lot, the marathon, there's no easy way. You have to learn it the hard way, no matter what, whatever lesson it is that you have to learn in it. It's different for different people, but there's only one way to learn the marathon and it's the hard way. So I definitely had to learn that there's no point along the way that this is going to feel like racing, like what I'm accustomed to. So that was weird. And so many other things too. I think it was, you mentioned world-class in the 1500, like the gun goes off and whether I'm in the 15 or the 5K or whatever, if I'm on the track, I'm like negotiating the field and getting myself into position to try to be in the front. And that is something else that I had to learn to let go of, which is good to learn. You know, there's women that can consistently run, 220 over and over and over in the marathon. And I thought I could be there and I wasn't there. And I had to back off and let those people go and then, be prepared for me to, run the pace that was right for me to make it to the finish. I did that a little bit in the trials and it still didn't go well for me. I still wasn't managing it right. And I don't know if that's the conditions of the day or that I was totally still new to it. I think it was a combination of things. But Boston was funny because to that point, I head out, the gun goes off and I think, okay, I know it's downhill. That's like the one thing everyone tells you is that the first 16 miles aren't that terrible because they're downhill and then it gets really hard. And so letting that front group go was something that I was really intentional about. But then there really wasn't a second group. So, I don't remember exactly, but it was somewhere around 3 miles that I really felt separated. And then that was it. I never had help the
whole
rest
time.
Of the way. I caught one woman, around 21. But other than that, I mean, I think, and I don't know exactly, but, I think Jason said I was somewhere around like 20th at mile 3 and then I finished 18th. So I just was never around anybody. So running, trying to race 23 miles totally alone, that was kind of a consequence of letting people go, but it was the right thing to do. And just very different experience from the gun goes off and you're, elbow to elbow with people the whole way.
Hey, everybody. All right, listen up. I am going to be at the Bay Shore Marathon Weekend in Traverse City, Michigan. I am so excited about this event. On Thursday, May 23rd, Des Linden and I are going to be hosting a live podcast. The show is at 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 23rd, and it is going to be so much fun. It is at the historic Traverse City Opera House, and then we'll have fun at the show and a meet and greet with Dez afterwards. Register to attend prior to May 10th, coming up, and we will draw one name from those registered by May 10th to be a guest to attend dinner with Dez and I before the show. It is at BayshoreMarathon.org. You can register for the race there, which is Saturday, May 25th. That's going to be awesome. There's a half marathon and a marathon. I will be sending you off on race day. I will be cheering you on as you come in through the finish line. I'm so excited to be announcing at that race that weekend. So go to BayshoreMarathon.org to learn more about the race and get signed up for the live show with myself and Dez Linden. All right, friends, back to the podcast. Yeah, and also, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like knowing that like in the 15, like you're one of the ones to beat, like you're up there, like that's how it's going to be. You're in a separate, you like intentionally separated yourself from the front in this race.
Yeah, and that, you know, I started on the mission to run the marathon not thinking I would have to do that. And that maybe that was, you know, a little bit of hubris, pride, I don't know, you know, but I mean, I didn't just say, oh, I'm just going to switch and be great at something different. I mean, I had reasons to believe I could be really good at this. You know, I've done workouts and long runs and so forth that aren't marathon training, but gave some indication that I could have an ability in the marathon. So yeah, we set out with that, and then dealing with injury and having to like go all the way back, get totally out of shape, start from square one and build back up. Having to do that twice over the last 2 years is just really, it's just a lot of work, and it's a lot of psychological, like staying in it, you know, when things look grim. And I'm at the point in my career too, where I could be done. You know, I could, there were many, many, many people that loved me that were like, you don't have to do this. You know, you've already made your mark. You'll be remembered. You don't have to do the marathon. And, but I really enjoyed the process, hard as it was, and really wanted to see what I could do out there. And I felt like finding out what I could do and having that experience and that journey was worth more than, I don't know exactly how to say it, but like that was more important to me than being really, really good, than being totally world class. Like I was willing to step back and kind of get in touch with reality and still do it, then say, okay, I thought I'd be, you know, up near the front. I'm not going to be, so I'm going to move on.
Okay. I want to talk about like celebrating this huge accomplishment, but I also want to talk about, I want to go there having to kind of like humble yourself and be like, okay, like I thought maybe I would be here, but this is what it is. And this is where I'm going to be and how I'm going to compete, coming from this like champion background, right? Like, how do you walk through that? I think that that's really relevant to a lot of people in their careers and their parenting and whatever it is they're walking through in life. Like, you thought you might enter this next thing this way, and then it turns out to be a little bit different and you have to adjust.
Yeah. Yeah. I have done, if I'm allowed to compliment myself, I've done a good job in my life not surrounding myself with just total irrational cheerleaders, people that just tell me I can do anything with no evidence of that. I have really grounded, really amazing people that speak real life into what I'm doing and not just unconditional praise. And I think that's important when you're trying to do something really hard. So Mark and Heather were always very honest with me about where they thought I was and what they thought I could do. I think they had to adjust their expectations as we got out there and the injuries happened and the work got really underway. My husband is an experienced marathoner and he's always been really honest with me. These people are all really, my family like loves me and wants me to succeed, but also doesn't like really care about running. I think I have a good balance in my life of people that show up, are really happy for me when I'm happy, but also show up and when it doesn't go well, you know, they're still there. And that crowd in your life is always going to be smaller than the crowd that's there when you're crushing it. And that's just the nature of things, right? There's nothing wrong with that. That's just the nature of our, what people are attracted to. So as a result of having really wonderful people who love me beyond, you know, just the success of running and are willing to say, we love you, but this isn't like, this goal is, needs an adjustment, or this isn't rational. So that's been good. But as a result of that, that's really created a lot of like positive self-image and security in my own sense of who I am. Because if I had a dozen people around me every single day training saying, you can run 5:30 pace the whole way, we know you can do it, you know you can do it, and then you go out and you keep failing at that, that would really make me question, like, why does everyone see something and I can't do it? And instead I have great people around me saying, hey, let's look at this and see what you can really do. And then let's try to do that. And that's part of why I was successful in the 15 for so long. You know, I never tried to do something in a race that we didn't have evidence that I could do practice, you know? And that was one of my superpowers. I used to always go out to races and say, I'm not being asked to do anything today that I haven't already done. And so that was consistent and true as I approached the marathon too.
What did Mark and Heather say to you when you were like, I'm ready to be a marathoner?
that was a conversation that kind of unfolded over time. It wasn't, I don't think they were surprised. You know, I've watched Jason do it for a long time. I was really intrigued. And you go to marathons and it's just an intoxicating environment of enthusiasm. And you just think, oh, I kind of want to be a part of this. But again, to my point earlier, I mean, I remember being on a run near my house and stopping, you know, partway for water or something. And Mark was in the truck. And I remember saying, like, I keep thinking about it and I really have this itch to do the marathon. And Mark said, you can go for it, but there's no guarantee you're going to be great at it. And that's a good coach.
Yeah. How did that make you feel in the moment?
I mean, we have a really long relationship. I've worked with them since I was a kid, you know, 18 years old in 2005, I came to Colorado. And so I've worked with them for a long time. So, when you have a long-term deep understanding of each other, and you have that communication over the course of decades, how it made me feel when he said that to me was like, he's just going to keep being honest. And I appreciate that, you know, different athletes need different types of coaches. And so, you know, what I'm describing isn't going to be the right approach for everyone, but it's definitely the right approach for me. I always want to have someone that has their feet grounded so that I can be the dreamer, so that I can be the crazy one and say, I think I can be world-class at this, and have someone else say, well, here are the steps to get there and let's start with step one and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. So, Boston, you finish in 2:31, 18th place, fourth American, which you look at the Americans that finished ahead of you and it's like, Des and Sarah have been on this like 20-year marathon journey, and Emma Bates has obviously been doing it for quite a few years now and was fifth last year in Boston. What was that like reception like from those women when you crossed the finish line? And talk to me about that like camaraderie you've been able to experience with the marathon community now coming off the track.
All amazing women, amazing examples of perseverance and resilience and sticking through. I mean, you could choose any one of those three. And in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, talk about how things were hard for them and they stuck with it and look how great they're doing. So great examples to me of it's hard at some point for everyone. And so I'm not unique in that. And so great examples of what it can look like on the other side if you stick with it. But they were so far ahead of me. There was no celebration with them when I was done. They were like on the massage tables, you know, sipping their recovery drinks by the time I was done. But really, really fun. You know, the other thing too that I learned kind of going through the experience of Boston is, and I thought about this some after the race was over, you know, those women have experience on the Boston course. All three of them do. And man, now having done it once, I can see how valuable that is. Like when know what's coming, I'd never even driven the course before. Like I didn't know it. I had the map and like the elevation chart. But, and then of course, when I ended up finding myself in a pocket alone, I wanted to be careful enough to have a really good experience and feel good enough through the Newton Hills, which is 16 to 21. So I was careful to be able to have a good experience through there and then just kind of see what I had left at the end. So, yeah. So I don't know. I don't mean to like deviate off of chatting about those ladies, but that's one thing that now having done it, I think, oh, like they have this experience that now I understand how valuable it is. And running Boston again, I feel like I would have a lot more confidence going into it, just kind of having a better understanding of what's coming.
Wait, so do you want to do it again?
Oh, I don't know. It was really hard. It was, you know, it's funny because having raced it, I feel like, you know, everyone, you're going to do it too. I'm just waiting for it. Everyone keeps asking me if I'm going to run another marathon. I don't know. But
I was hoping you would like, just delve that information make my announcement here.
So right when you're done, there is not a deeper pain well that I've ever experienced in my entire life than the last, like, oh my gosh, the last 2 miles is the hardest thing I've ever done in running in my life. By far.
Okay.
By far.
Wow.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, in like the way that it should be, right? Like it was so hard in a way that's almost like kind of weirdly magical because you just feel empty. And then you look at your watch and you're still running 550 pace. And it's like, I feel like I'm weirdly bending the universe because there's just no possible way that my body's moving that fast anymore. You like lose all sensation of being fast. And you look down on your watch ready for, it was funny. I remember the last 2 miles really thinking like, oh, it's coming like that mile. That's just, I'm totally blown up and it didn't really come. I mean, I stayed, you know, right around 6 minute pace, even the last a little bit. And I got sidetracked. I don't remember the point I was making, but yeah, it was, I'm very cleverly avoiding answering that question about whether running a marathon. Okay. So back on track. Oh my gosh. I don't think it's possible to have this sense of like, oh, I really want to do that again right away. Like I definitely,
right.
But I weirdly, and I told my husband this, we were like, I don't know how anyone finishes and says, I just want to go run another race. I should clarify, like running 26 miles is very different than racing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to race, but the course and be the like strategic competitive person, I did think, oh, I want to do that again. Because just having done that course once, I feel like now I have a better understanding of it. And it's, I don't know that I would make dramatically different decisions, but I think I could make more confident judgment calls in the middle of the race, just having a better understanding of how my body responded to the course. So I don't know if I'm going to run Boston again. I don't know if I'm going to run another marathon, but the thing that like immediately intrigued me was doing that course again.
So yeah. Cause when I asked you about like the focus of the marathon being different than the 15, talk to me about like that difference in that pain, like the last lap of the 15 pain in comparison to the last 2 miles of the Boston Marathon.
Oh, the 15 is just, it's amazing. If you can do any event in your life, be a miler. It is just
really
an amazing event. And I miss it. I miss it. The 15, the last lap, like, not even the last lap. Like, I could care less about the bell going off and having 400 to go. But really that last 300, when you feel like, I don't know how much harder I can go, and I don't even know if I'm going to make it to the finish, and you know what else is feeling that way, like that level of, this is eventually going to, the wheels are going to totally come off, but I'm make it further than the next person. I don't know. And then the amazing thing is that you feel that way with 300 to go. You feel like all that pressure and all the momentum past 300. You come around the curve, and on a good race with 150 to go, you accelerate again. And I just live for that. I love that. I love that sense of like, as hard as it is, I'm more willing to go harder than anyone else. You know, everybody's willing to go as hard as they can. It's just a matter of whether your body can kind of keep it together. But I do think there's a really heavy psychological toll in the 15, because you just know 100% it's going to be painful for most of the way. And I think you have to kind of love that. And you have to be able to get into that space where it's like, in fact, I like to explain that I think throughout my career, I had different times where like I'd cross the finish line and then I'd have this kind of like delayed reaction and be really excited about how I'd finished. But it was like, you know, a little delayed. And it's because literally I was giving everything I had to the race and like had nothing left to be aware of what was going on around me. And I love that. I love that. I love being just so committed to the present moment that it's, I'm just willing to see where the chips fall, and having very little awareness of like how they're actually falling in the moment. So, 2017 was a little bit that way. I crossed the finish line and there was a little delay. Prefontaine, when I broke four for the first time, was that way. When I won the world championships, was 2011, and that was a really delayed response. But then carrying that to the marathon, it is a psychological toll in a very, very different way. For me anyway, like pulling in the reins and holding back and being careful for so long. You know, people say the first half or the first 16 or 18 should feel like a long run. And I think I kind of learned about myself that if it wasn't a certain level of hard, I felt like I wasn't giving enough and I wasn't trying hard enough. And the people that have poured into me and loved me and been loyal to me through all of this deserve for me to try harder, and kind of rewind and kind of learn. Like, if you're running comfortable, you're not doing it wrong. It took me, in fact, I'm still figuring that out. So there were parts of Boston that I was just, honestly, I was having a blast. Like, I felt good. I was kind of in a pocket, I was totally alone. So it was a little bit boring. And so I kind of interacted with the crowd and had fun. And I'm really fighting, like presently, I'm fighting this temptation to feel like there was something wrong with me having fun along the way. Because I just bring a lot of intensity and a lot of competitiveness to what I do. But as hard as it was the last 2 miles, I have no doubt that running was right for me that day, for sure.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because I do think I see you as that, like a super serious competitor. I mean, you have to be super serious when you're competing at the level you're competing at. But Emma Bates was high-fiving people in Wellesley, you know? So like,
yeah,
it's got to be this really strange thing to understand. What we've been talking about this whole time is like, when you run the 15, it's like hard the entire time almost. Yeah. And like you just can't run hard the entire marathon. You literally, your body won't let you. So
yeah.
I can't imagine how difficult that must be for you to like change that mindset. Like for me to have the stamina, endurance, and strength to finish.
Yeah.
I gotta like chill. That patience. Yeah. That's the patience is so hard.
The common denominator between the two is having a secure sense of who you are and how you're going to execute the race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're sitting in seventh with a lap to go in the 15 and you know you're willing to go like total guts, hard out, or hard, you know, as hard as you can, you have to have this sense of security that you're willing to do that. You're willing to go that hard. And that it will turn out okay. Because there is this fear that you're going to slow walk the last 50 meters and get passed by the entire field, because that can happen. And so you have to have a real sense of who you are and in order to risk that. And then, yeah, the other side of that coin is that I'm learning that it takes the same level of security and confidence in your plan and who you are as a marathoner in this moment to hold back and think, okay, through 16 miles, I have to have a certain level of effort because it's just going to get harder from there.
Hey, everybody, listen up. You want to get the best sleep ever. I know you do. And I am so honored that I am continuing my partnership with Lagoon Pillows, the best pillows out there. You've heard Emma Bates talk about it. You've heard some people who are serious business about their sleeping, including me, rave about the Lagoon Pillows. Their mission is to help you as an athlete sleep your best so you can make every day great. Recovery is so important. We're training so much, even if you're not training for a marathon, like just training for life. That's what I've been doing for like 5 years. Nothing is more important than good sleep. And these pillows are the answer. You take a 2-minute sleep quiz and you are lined up with a pillow that is perfect for the way you sleep. So go to lagoonsleep.com/Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, and use the code Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, for 15% off your order. Go get your partner one too, because they're going to be super jealous if you have this amazing pillow and they do not. lagoonsleep.com/Lindsay. Use the code Lindsay at checkout. Back to the show. Oh, this is so good. So on Friday, I am speaking at the Mini Marathon Expo. And I'm talking to people about like hard work and fun, like finishing your race without regrets, and like how you can actually work really, really hard. And that can also be really, really fun. So like, how do you do that? And you're a more serious person, like in nature, I would say, than like Akira D'Amato, who is someone like I talk about in this talk, because she just like, seems like she's always having a blast. But you just said it, like as serious as you are when you go all in on something, you still have fun. Even in that 15, when you said it hurts so bad. Yeah. How do you do that? Like, how do you wrap your head around like this can be fun and hard at the same time?
I think real happiness is fully using your talents. Mm. When you know what you're good at, and you can execute that and say, I didn't just try to give it my best. I gave my best. I think that's real happiness, because it's not just like a vapid kind of superficial happiness on the surface. It's like deeply understanding that who you are showed up today. And that can look different ways for different people. It can look really serious for some people. It can look really carefree for some people. So I think mining inside of yourself and saying, how can I walk away from this experience saying the talent I have, I fully emptied that today. That has been the recipe for me. And like I said, I mean, that recipe has had to like tweak a bit between racing on the track and the marathon. So sometimes you have to trial and error, kind of figure out how is my talent best expressed. But that I think is the key for me is, yeah, how do I know who I am and then be that woman courageously the whole way from the start to the finish.
Inserts Jenny Simpson slide into presentation. Oh, I love that, Jenny. That's so good. And it doesn't matter if you are running in the Olympics. It doesn't matter if you are trying to break 25 minutes in a 5K, like showing up and giving your best with what you've been given and the work
exactly.
you've put in.
And I told my high school coach a few years ago, it got bigger, but it never got better. Mm-hmm. Like winning the state championship. I mean, that was the world championships for me when I was 15 mm-hmm. and 16 and 17. And the stage got bigger. But honestly, those victories, when you know that you were the best on that day and you beat everybody else, it's like that feeling, you just, as you advance in your career, the crowd just gets bigger. But I think mm-hmm. internally, that sense of like pride and getting it right. Yeah, it got bigger, but it didn't get better.
How are you feeling going into like a summer Olympics, like track season and not being on the track?
Yeah. I mean, this 4 years, well, 2021, really, 3 years ago, I missed the Olympics, but I was racing. Mm-hmm. So, this will be the first time that, but world championships, you know, especially when they were Eugene and I missed that, that felt big. You know, I always kind of imagined that, oh, how amazing would it be to run in front of a U.S. crowd, like run a world championships in front of a U.S. crowd. And so that was hard. I don't know. I've had it all. Like, what do I have to be sad about? I don't know. I just think I've been to the top and the majority, like the vast majority of people that are good at our sport will give everything they've got and they won't win. And I got to win. And so I just feel really grateful for that. I feel grateful that, you know, there's times where like I'll finish my Sunday run and I'm driving home and I live in Boulder. And so there's a lot of people doing Sunday runs. and even as I'm finished, you know, I can see, you know, everyone from, you know, the elites in Boulder where you like throw a rock and you hit an elite runner in Boulder, especially on a Sunday morning, down to, you know, the moms pushing strollers and the grandpa's still running and enjoying it. And I mean, there's just all kinds of people out running. And I love when I come home, I take a drive and I pass quite a few other runners as I'm driving home. And I think they're a lot of them in their own way are working as hard as I did today. You know, like I have from not having another job through the week to pour into this today. But especially people like my husband that are in these sub elite groups, and they're, you know, there's a lot of them trying to run 230s, 220s, under 220s for the marathon. And they have full-time jobs. They have families. And those guys and those men and women are out there crushing it on Sundays. And I'm one of them. And I got to do it at the highest level in the world. I got to climb up on a podium and be on the top spot a lot of times. So anyway, all of that to say it's someone else's turn. And I'm totally okay with that.
Where will you watch everything?
I have no idea. That's a good question. I don't know where we'll be. I don't know if I'll be home.
Do you think you'll go?
Training hard. I typically don't go to races yet in my life unless I have work. And so unless Puma has something for me to do or someone out there has a job that they want me to be there for. I probably won't go just yet as a fan or a spectator, but I'll watch for sure.
Yeah. Oh, what is this like? I don't want to overuse season. Let me think of a different word. Every time I say season of life, my husband's like, there you go, talking about seasons again.
We can steal from Taylor Swift and make it one of our eras.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. What is this era? Do you like the new album, by the way?
I'm so far behind. I mean, I've listened to a few songs, but I haven't listened to the album. Sorry.
So I've listened to it nonstop and I just kind of stopped. But my husband ruined it for me the other night a little bit because we were sitting on the back porch. So I had put it on and then he put Sturgill Simpson on and he was like, see, this is real music. You can actually hear the instruments instead of just the person's voice with the music in the background. And I was like, now that's all I hear when I listen to it. You ruined it. I think I can get back. But he kind
you
of
can,
like.
Yes. You can always get back.
So, eras. In this era of your life, how are you like managing the transition? You just said it's someone else's turn now. Yet you've been pursuing now the marathon at a very high level. And like maybe you're going to continue to see where it goes. Maybe not. We don't know yet. But like how are you handling that just like change?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to be clear. I'm going to continue road racing through the year for sure. You know, I don't like change. I've been with the same coaches for so long. I've been in the same town for so long. I ran the 1500 for 12 years without committing to another event the whole time. I'm not a big fan of doing things differently, but it's good. I've grown a lot. It's been stretching me in ways that are good and new. And so I guess this, it does feel like an extended era of transition, both personally and professionally. And that's kind of a funny thing when those times in life overlap so significantly and you're going through the same thing in both your private life and your, or just your at home life and professional life. Where I was and what I was doing 3 years ago was just so solid and felt like it was going to last forever. And where I am and how I'm working and operating and who I am as a person and our little life here with our house and our dogs and the fire and all that stuff. Like, it is just so different 3 years later. So I'm having to learn that change is inevitable, but the suffering is kind of up to me. And I can either really resist and grumble about it, or I can kind of embrace it, put my arms around it and get on with it. And that's hard. I think that's been the trickiest part for me is I'm a happy person. Like, I'm not, I don't wake up, you know, with a storm cloud hardly ever.
Really?
But yeah. I mean, as serious and intense as I am, I think I'm a pretty like happy person.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. But I think learning to look forward and not grieve the past is just a process. And I feel like I'm beyond halfway. Like, I'm coming out of that in a really profound and meaningful way. But there's, you know, a version of my life I thought I would be living now that is different. You have to grieve that and get past it and really, and I do, I'm really happy and pleased and excited about where I am and the opportunities that are in front of me that I get to choose from on what might be next.
Well, when I said really, I didn't mean like, I can't believe you're happy when you wake up, but I struggle with being a grumpy butt in the morning. And I was going to ask you right before you said that, what do you like when you wake up in the morning? So I was like, what are people like right when they get up? Like, what is the first thing you do? Are you someone who like you open your eyes and you're like up and you go, or do you like waller around in bed a little bit?
No, I am not a get rise and shine.
Okay. No,
there's like a rise and there's no shine.
Okay. So you kind of like roll around a little bit and wake yourself up in bed a little bit first.
Yeah. Although I will say that is something that marathoning has changed for me. Getting up and running in the morning is definitely something I do a lot more. And I've I mean, waking up at 6 or 6:30 to go run is just totally par for the course now. And I used to be like, oh, maybe I'll like warm up and get ready and do a workout around 9. So marathoning changes that for sure, especially when you're trying to fit in 100 miles a week, like get up and go because you got to run again most days. I'm not a rise and shiner. But
you're happy.
And yeah. And
when you wake up,
the first thing I do when I get up is I take the dogs out of their crates. They don't sleep in bed with us. They have their happy little homes. Yeah. And so I take them out and I feel like the first thing I do is I take the dogs out and we kind of like greet the weather, right? Like, for a runner, that's like something that you have to calculate every day is like what the weather is like. And so it's kind of validating sometimes to see the dogs really grumpy about the weather, you know, because I'm like, I'm with you. I get it. I'm super annoyed that it's raining too. And you're lucky because you're a dog and you don't have to be in it. And in an hour, I will be in it. So and my husband, he can roll out of bed and in 7 minutes be running.
Oh my gosh. Mine too. I don't know how they do that.
Yeah. So I usually make some tea and toast or something like that. And the dogs are like, they're such a welcome excuse. I'm like, oh, I can't go right away. I need to take the dogs out. And
you gotta give them attention.
That routine is like the perfect excuse for me to like spend a half an hour, an hour kind of waking up and getting ready. And then usually here's a little trick in life. When you wake up, put your running clothes on. That to me is like, once my running clothes are on, then I start to kind of feel like, okay, I can head out the door and get going. But if I wake up and I put a sweatshirt on and kind of bundle up a little bit, oh, that's the beginning of the end of me heading out right away.
I want that though for like an hour. I want that. Like I want the cozy time. I do want the runtime, but I want the cozy time first.
That's right.
Do you read in the morning?
No, I don't. I read at night. I read, I think like a lot of people, I read before I go to bed. But this idea, I don't remember who it was, but somebody on NPR was talking about how she had such a hard time, you know, getting through all these books she needed to read and she'd fall asleep at night. And so she started reading in the morning. It's like, maybe that's like a cheat code to life. Maybe I should wake up and read for a while. It's been probably a year since I heard that and I haven't tried it. So failing on attempting that, life change. But yeah, not a morning reader, but willing to try it.
Well, see, I read every morning and my husband's always like, this reading time is, it's getting to be obnoxious because I read for a very long time because I want to read my Bible. I want to read my motivational book. And then I want to read a chapter in my fun book. Like this, this process is way too long, you know, and I want to be cozy while I do it. So that's why I delay the running clothes.
Yeah. I get that. I think I would lose my job.
Yeah. You need to hold yourself to like a one chapter situation. Speaking of your job though, Puma, we haven't talked since you signed with Puma. So it's been a little while. How's that going?
Great. I just really appreciate that they swooped in and were willing to support me and let me do this crazy thing of the marathon. And they've given me years to figure it out, which is really generous. And yeah, it's been really positive. It's also fun to, you know, you're in the sport for a really long time. And for me in particular, I've had kind of a smaller, network of people helping me and advising me along the way. And so to open, expand that and meet new people and have kind of a new crowd, that's been really fun.
Yeah. Can you talk about it? Was it sad to leave New Balance? Like you'd been with them for so long.
I mean, that's the heartbreak in my career is not having that opportunity to continue with them. And you know, it's that it happens. Like my experience is not unique. There's a lot of athletes that get later in their career and have to make a change and they do it. You know, I guess I felt like I had good examples. You know, there's Allison Felix and Meb Kifletsky. Like there's other examples of really accomplished athletes that made a change and then went on to do great things. And so I just really tried to focus on that and think, you know, this happens and people get through it. And I had 12 amazing years. Mm-hmm. I did my best work as a New Balance athlete. And I see that logo and it just fills my heart. I'm so proud of the work I did there.
Oh, talk about Puma representing at the Olympic trials though. Puma had a great day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They had an incredible day. And it's so fun when you're with a brand, you don't necessarily train with or work with all the athletes in that brand. Well, obviously we don't. But it is fun to have like a team connection with people that are just crushing it. Even though I didn't have the day that I wanted, genuinely so excited and happy for Dakota and Fiona and just watching them just be amazing in the moment that it counts the most. And I've made Olympic teams and I know what that feels like, you know, so it's just fun to watch that in other people that you feel kind of connected to.
And we haven't touched the Olympic trials at all, but what did you learn from that experience?
I've never quit anything before. And that was really hard, hard to like find a place for it and kind of process that after it was over. I stepped off the course at mile 18, but really it started going pretty badly. And I had stopped racing around mile 15. Getting from 15 to 18 just felt like an eternity. I was kind of, I stopped a few times and jogged and, I had really terrible cramps in my feet and in my calves, which is what caused me to have to stop and kind of jog in the last 3 miles to mile 18. But also like, I don't know, I feel like you know, you learn a lot because it's just a new experience. And there's so many things that, I'd never encountered before in that. But also failure is part of sports. It's just a baked in part of the experience. And you know, you're not going to win everything. You know, you're not going to achieve all of your goals every time. You're never going to get everything you want. You know, along the way, I wanted to be an NCAA champion in cross country, and I was second twice and really messed it up my senior year and wasn't even close. So failure is something that I had experienced along the way. Just bad luck is something that I've experienced along the way. And so I had those experiences to kind of draw on, in the sense that this doesn't have to define me or doesn't have to be the beginning or the end of anything. It can just be part of, it can just be one chapter in a really long, big story. So that's really good. But the most kind of profound thing I left that experience with was, and I've described this a little bit in other, other opportunities and contexts, but when I did finally step off the course, I was right at the start finish area, or yeah, right at the start finish area. And, you know, you have to tell somebody on the course that you're done for the day. And because I had stopped there, they didn't have to like send a card or anything. Oh, that would have like mortified me. I was not, I don't want to get carted off. That was not going to happen. I was going to run myself up. So the gentleman said, you know, we'll walk you up to the finish. And I said, is it okay? I'll just jog myself. Cause I mostly wanted to like let people in the crowd know that I was okay. I wasn't like heat stroke or like had an injury. Yeah. I just was done and it wasn't my day. So I jogged up, and I believe it was Carrie Tollefson that was doing the like live announcing at the finish line.
Yeah.
And then the whole crowd around, like everyone just poured love on me in that like 50 meter jog or whatever up to really jogging out. And then when I got to the finish, John and Betsy Hughes, who are, that's a whole other podcast topic. They're lifelong friends.
Yeah, the
of mine.
Track Shack.
They sold me my, yeah, they owners. Sold me my first pair of running shoes. They own Track Shack, and they were the meet directors for, or the race directors for the trials. They were right there and held me and hugged me and told me they were so proud of me. And, you know, I had been jogging 3 miles kind of knowing that I'm going to face failure when I get to 18 step off. And instead, just everybody was so positive and so loving and so kind. And it's one thing for people to say, we love you no matter what. And in that moment, I really got to experience what it feels like for people to love you no matter what. And if I had won the trials, I would have had an experience similar to other experiences I've had in my life. And by failing in that moment, I got this completely new idea of what love feels like and looks like in the context of fans and the support of sports. It's a weird thing. Like I want to have won or want to have made the team, but in a weird way, that is just an incredible treasure that I'll take with me from that experience.
Ah, that's so beautiful. I didn't realize that you jogged it in like that.
Yeah.
Did you come through the finish line?
I don't think I crossed over the finish line. I think I kind of ran up to the finish and then
up to the
I got
side there.
Off to the side.
Everybody, and everybody knew what you were doing.
Yeah, because I had left the court by that point. Because the finish was a very short, like half block extension.
Yes.
Off the course. And it's funny, I remember those really the last mile running, kind of jogging up. I remember thinking, when I get up to, so it's a loop course. So I got a point where I was going to have to make a decision. Either I'm stopping the loop here or I'm going to turn left and continue for another 8 miles and finish. And I kind of knew jogging up to there. I remember having this really lucid like thought about the decision I was going to have to make. And I thought, I'm going to have to do one of two very hard things. I'm either have to continue and jog and be miserable and not race for another hour by doing the next 8 miles and finish, or I'm going to have to face the embarrassment of just admitting that my race day is over and quit. And I just felt like I just had a choice. I just had to choose one of two really hard things. And in hindsight, now in the moment, I wasn't thinking like, oh, I should drop out so that I can race in 10 weeks. But of course, in hindsight, I'm glad that I made the choice that I did, because I had this profound experience that I will treasure forever, that will be part of who I am moving forward, of having so many people support me in a moment that really low. And also I kind of saved myself to then be able to cross the finish line at Boston. So, yeah, deep inside of you, when you have those choices to make, there's some sage wisdom that you can be connected to that I think I was kind of connected to without even, you know, really realizing it.
Wow. So good, Jenny. I don't want to go. It's time to go. This is great. So that failure, disappointment, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then 10 weeks later, you run Boston. They, you know, Boston calls and they give you this opportunity.
Yeah.
How did you get the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to try this again?
Oh, I'm so glad you're asking this question, because with all the accomplishments and all the opportunity, or all the other times in my life that I've been resilient, it feels like it hardly matters when you're one step outside of a low. So you can feel like a loser no matter how many accomplishments you've had in your life. And that's, I don't know if that's just too direct or crass to say, but it's true. You quit a race and you step off and you had this big dream and it's over, and you feel you are a failure, and that hurts. And getting over that, no matter how much I've accomplished in the fact, like, that feeling still exists on its own. And so it was really, really, really hard. Really not that day, but kind of like 3 days later, when you're waking up and your family's all gone home and you're in your own house and there's not really an immediate plan. So that was really hard. And so, but I did feel like physically okay, when I went out to run the next day or two. And so, the first person I reached out was Sam Grotewald at New York Roadrunners, because I knew the New York City Half was coming up, and I thought, I know myself, the best thing for me to do is just run a race again, whatever that looks like. So, I reached out to him pretty quickly and said, Sam, is there any chance that there's a spot for me in New York? And just incredible, and not just like, oh, sure, we'll have you there, but like really supportive, like really happy and excited that I wanted to do it. And like, of course, like, we'd love to have you. So, so that was the first little glimmer of happiness and like, okay, in a few weeks I can race again and kind of start to put this behind me. And so in the time between the trials in New York, Boston reached out and I had the opportunity to race there, and I had agreed to go for it. And in New York, even as I'm getting ready to race the half marathon, the day before the race in New York, they made the announcement that I had committed to run Boston. And I had this like sinking feeling of like, oh my gosh, have I made a huge mistake? Because holding on for 10 weeks is hard. Like, I thought, oh, 10 weeks will go by so quick. And it did not go by quick. It was hard. It was hard because you think, you know, you're on the trials and then you're going to get this big break. No matter what happens, I'm going to take a big rest after that. So holding on for 10 weeks was hard. Being in that position where I knew, okay, tomorrow is a race, and the last race I did, I quit. Like, New York for me was all about just, I just don't want to have to quit. In fact, Des and I were talking as we were walking up to the starting line of the New York City half marathon. And she's asked me, you know, how are you feeling? Are you ready? And I just told her, I was like, my only goal today is not to quit. And that just feels so low for someone that's, I've never been a quitter, you know? But then New York went really well. And that was just a huge, huge lift for me. And I don't think I could have stood on the starting line with 26 miles ahead of me if I didn't have the confidence from the New York City half. So anyway, I'm giving you a really long explanation, but I'm doing that in order to kind of demonstrate, like, it has all the feels, no matter what you've accomplished in the past, no matter how much you believe yourself to be able to do well in the future. You still have to, like, you know, the only way out is through, and you still have to go through it and process all those feelings and feel like a failure, and then self, you know, positive talk that you're not, and then do something and not fail and see, you know, kind of prove to yourself again that, you can do it. And, I remember the last 5K in particular of that New York City half, I felt good again. And I just remember thinking like, oh, like I am good at this. I'm really good at this. And I felt like myself again. And that's a beautiful place to get to just a few weeks after something like quitting.
Jenny Simpson, thank you. Thank you for sharing all of this. I appreciate it so much.
I love the conversation, and I continue to like think through it all and learn a lot as we have these conversations. So thanks for facilitating it and having me. And yeah, we shouldn't go so many years between next time.
No, never again.
And good luck with your talk at the Mini. It's so Thank good you. To hear how other people like cope and mentally handle the ups and downs of what we're doing, you know, whether it's just running or whether it's kind of that bigger story of what you're trying to do and who you're trying to be in life. So, I'm really glad you're going to be out there. You're going to be great, and you're going to encourage a lot of people.
Oh, thank you so much. Hey everybody, thanks for being here today. Thank you, Jenny Simpson, for coming on the podcast. You can learn more about this show, everything we talked about, at sandyboyproductions.com. including links to sponsor discount codes like Lagoon Pillows, lagoonsleep.com/Lindsay. Use the code Lindsay for 15% off. Come back, let me know what you think. These are the best pillows, they really are. Don't forget, I'll be in Traverse City, Michigan for the Bay Shore Marathon. Live show with Des Linden that Thursday. Go to bayshoremarathon.com to get registered for the race, or just come on up for the live podcast. It's going to be a blast. If you get registered by May 10th for the live podcast, you will be entered to win a special dinner with Des and myself before the show, which will be super fun. You got to get registered by May 10th, though. All right, friends. Thanks for being here. Connect with me on Instagram. I'm LindsayHine626. You can always email me with any suggestions or guests you'd like to hear on the show. Or if you own a business or run the marketing department of an organization or business that you think would align with this show and you want to look into some sponsorship opportunities, you can email me, Lindsay@sandyboyproductions.com. We also have another great new podcast in the network. It's called the Trail Network Podcast. And this is a group of 4 amazing trail runner women who are just doing an awesome job over there on that show. Check it out. I am so excited that we've launched that in the Sandy Boy Productions podcast network. All right, friends. Well, thanks for being here, and we will see you next week on I'll Have Another.